Howdy, everybody. Hope everybody's doing well. Welcome to the webcast. My name is Andrew Duffy. I am a developer evangelist for Microsoft. You can see my contact information there. I've also added to the conversation a link to my blog as well as a contact link in case you'd like to get a copy of this slide deck as PDF. You can just drop me an email and I can get that to you. Or if you prefer, you can go to the link at the bottom, that bit.ly link, and grab actually a whole mess of content from our Windows 8 developer camps, which includes the deck on contracts that was the starting point for my deck here today. So you can go and grab that from that bit.ly link. So we'll get started today. We're going to talk about how contracts in Windows 8 can help you build a killer Metro-style app. This is sort of comes from a design concept of Metro style apps called Win is One. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. So. Right. So the basic concept behind this is the idea that contracts allow you to integrate with the Windows 8 experience in your app. So there's a lot of parts, moving parts associated with that. If we take a look, we can see just how many contracts and extensions are available in Windows 8. Now, this it one of the things I want to point out here is that everything that I'm talking about today is specific to the Windows 8 Consumer Preview. There may be some changes in the release preview, which is coming out in the not too distant future. Hopefully, nothing dramatic, but just wanted to at least give you the heads up that what I'm talking about today applies to the Consumer Preview. I'm also going to post a link here to the bit.ly link for the contracts page on MSDN. So if you click through that link, you'll get to a page that describes each of these contracts and extensions in pretty detail. We're going to talk about a subset of these today. If we tried to talk about all of these different contracts and extensions, it would take much longer than an hour. So here's what we're going to look into today. We're going to do our best to get through as many of these as possible. We'll certainly get through the search, share, and settings in detail. I'd like to also, if I can, get in a demo of the Play 2 and app-to-app picking, but we'll have to see how our time runs today in terms of getting to all of that. So we're going to start off talking about the search contract. And the search contract, the idea behind that is really to make your app searchable from anywhere within the system, anywhere within Windows 8. And the way that that works is using a concept called charms, or the search charm. So that allows the operating system to provide one single location for search to take place in applications, in content, in settings, so that users always know where to go when they want to search. It makes life a lot easier for users. It also makes it more consistent for people to find what they're looking for. So let's take a look at how search is going to work in Windows 8. So I'm going to share my desktop here. And I'm going to give this a second to come up here. While I'm waiting, I will take a little sip of my beverage. There we go. All right, so hopefully you're seeing my desktop now. I'm going to switch over to the Windows 8 Start screen, and I'm going to roll on over here, and I'm going to open up the Build application. So this is an application that was created for the Build conference that was put on in Anaheim, California, last September, where we really introduced the developer story for Windows 8. This is a great application for this demo because what it allows me to do is I can go in and do a search and I can say, let's find out about contracts. And if I start typing contract, you can see it's actually allowing me to preview specific sessions that were given on contracts. So for example, I can tap here and go directly to a session listing for search integrating into the Windows search experience. So I can tap in here. I could actually view a video. I could look at the slides. And if I hit the back button, I can go back to the home page. The funny thing is that this app also, in addition to the content, also provides information about users who provided their contact information for this conference, people who are attending, in particular Microsoft staff. So if I type in Devhammer, my online alias here, you can see it actually lists me as Microsoft, shows me, I guess I didn't put in a bio, but it has my contact information, my devhammer.net blog, my various interests, etc. So I can find both session information as well as people information from this build application. And all of that happens via this search term. So what happens to access the search term? Right now I'm on a touch-based slate. So I'm sliding in from the right-hand side and tapping that search charm. I could also, if I'm using my keyboard, since I have a keyboard attached, I can hold the Windows key down and type C, which gives me the charms bar, and then I can use the arrow keys to go from one charm to another and enter to select the desired charm. And again, I can type in things like, say I want information on HTML5, I can hit enter, and it gives me a whole list of results based on HTML5. And I'm just going to swipe down from the top and close that application and flip back over to my slide deck for a moment. All right. There we go. Now, in terms of how search is implemented, let's take a look at sort of the workflow of search. We saw this a little bit, but we'll kind of talk through it here. So the idea is when an application is running, when an app is running, the search box is initially scoped to that app that's currently running. That app can provide search suggestions or query suggestions. So what's happening is the application that's currently running, if it implements the search contract, has a series of event handlers that it can register for. And as I'm typing in that search box, the search query information is passed into my application, and I can respond to that by providing query suggestions. So you can see those where we have the number 2. Then any application that has provided that search contract, that is registered for the search contract, is listed in the search UI from the OS as being available for search. So I can actually switch to a different application while I'm in the middle of a search if the application I'm currently running doesn't provide me the information that I'm looking for. And then the other thing that you saw in our build example is that you can also provide result suggestions. So a query suggestion is basically a keyword or a phrase that the user might want to search on, but it doesn't necessarily take them directly to a specific search result. A result suggestion, which includes this thumbnail and the title, as you see in kind of this weather example, basically says this is either a really strong result or an exact match, and I can take you directly to that. So you saw in the build demo example where I kind of showed you that, how that worked from the standpoint of giving that that exact result. So we're going to go back and let's do a demo on actually implementing search. So I'm going to flip back over to my desktop and load that up. All right. So before I jump into Visual Studio here, we got a question from Bill. Is there any reason that existing projects being developed with Visual Studio 2010 should not be upgraded and completed in Visual Studio 11? So in terms of current .NET applications, as far as I'm aware, there shouldn't be any reason that you wouldn't want to do that. Those applications aren't necessarily going to be immediately converted to Metro style applications, so there is a difference between desktop and Metro style applications. But an existing application, I believe Visual Studio 11 will, when it's fully released, be as was Visual Studio 2010, will allow you to kind of go back and forth. So you should be able to choose the target environment that you want to run in. I hope that answers that question. Another question Bill has is digital ink and the pen input going to be promoted and fully supported in Windows 8? Ink remains a possible input scenario. Touch also becomes a first-class citizen, particularly in metro-style applications. So I think you'll find that that kind of input is not is going to be at least as good as it was in Windows 7 and probably even better. So. And I'm not sure the answer. Bill also had a question: are there any activities on Connect related to Windows 8? I'm not entirely sure that I understand that question, so maybe you can clarify a bit. So I'm going to go ahead and jump in and do a demo. So what I'm going to do here, I'm actually going to show you a really cool feature of the Visual Studio 11 beta. In this case, I'm using the Visual Studio 11 Express beta for Windows 8. So this is a version of Visual Studio Express that's specifically targeted for building metro-style applications. This is free and will be free going forward. So I'm going to go ahead and click New Project. And I'm going to, rather than select one of the project templates that's built into the product from the get-go, I'm going to use this online section here. So you can see on the left-hand side, I have recent installed and online. I go over here to samples, and I can do a search for the specific sample that I'm looking for. And so I can say search contract. And I'm going to say search sample JavaScript. Now this check mark says, hey, this is actually already installed. So once I've installed a template or a sample template, I go over here to the installed section and samples, and those will all be listed here. So here's a search sample that I've got here. So let's say we'll do search demo 2. Click OK. Now these samples are provided by the development team, and these are what we call SDK samples. And there are SDK samples for just about every piece of functionality you might want to test out. So one of the first places you should look when you want to learn about one of these technologies or one of these contracts is one of these sample applications. So if we drill down into the structure of this, we can see that there's a default.html page. This has got the basic structure of our application. A lot of the SDK samples revolve around scenarios. So you'll have, for example, a scenario 1 input, you'll have a scenario 2 input, etc. So the idea behind this is that one SDK sample can show you a bunch of different ways of interacting with the code, etc. And then there's usually this base SDK.js. This has a lot of stuff that that has the functionality that's being implemented here, as well as some utility input as well. Let's see. And then if we look at our program.js, that's what's going to actually have our search information here. So for example, we've got this scenario 1 on activated event. That's actually going to be called when we get activated for search here. So what's happening in the search contract is that when we implement the search contract, we get a series of events that we can handle that allow us to respond to the OS saying, hey, you've just been activated with a search argument. So for example, when I get this activation event, I can go and look and see if the detail for this particular event, right? So when I get this event call, when I'm activated, I can say this argument has a detail on it. That detail has a kind property, and if that's equal to Windows.applicationModel.activation.activationKind.search, then I know I've been activated by a search. In which case, I'm going to change my display status to activated for search with the query, and then pass in this detail.query text. Right? It's a pretty straightforward sort of idea. One of the other things that gets implemented when I implement the search contract is I need to either manually, if I'm adding this code manually, or if I add the search contract at, using a template, I can actually have this done for me automatically. But one of the things that I have to do is in my AppX manifest file, I have to add this declaration for search, right? And I can do that simply by dropping down here. And you can see that this these declarations map closely to the list of extensions and contracts that I showed you earlier on the slide deck. In this case, search is already declared because this is a search sample, so I don't have to change anything here. But it's this declaration that tells the operating system, hey, I'm going to go ahead and handle searches. So when the user uses the search charm and my app is activated, make sure that you call those events and pass that information into my application. So if we take a look at running this, we get our splash screen. Our scenario one here is already selected using the search extension. So it gives us some instructions on how to do this. So we're going to go ahead and slide in from the right, select the search charm, and I'm going to start typing in SEA to Seattle. And we'll see down here in the output that we were activated for search with the query Seattle. And we can see that we're also selecting our search extension sample, which is the SDK sample that we're currently running. There are also some additional scenarios, so we can use search query suggestions. So again, I can go ahead and start typing, and you can see that if I type in SE, it returns Seattle, Seoul, Seattle, Washington. And the cool thing here is, so if I type in Seattle and click here, it says activated for search with the query Seattle. But let's say I don't get the information I want from the app that I'm currently running. I can also select another app, for example, the Maps app, and I can click on that, and it's going to load up that app, and it will activate that app and pass in that query suggestion or that query text, and it takes me directly to that location. Right, so I could also say, oh, let's say Los Angeles. Type that in there, and it takes me to Los Angeles. So it's very easy from from an end user standpoint to go from one application to another and pass in the appropriate information. Right. All right, so let's jump back over to Visual Studio and go ahead and stop debugging. And I'll show you quickly. If we look down here at our scenarios 2, 3, 5, and 6, when we handle a suggestion request, basically it's going to do one of a series of things depending on which scenario ID we're running. We're going to actually call a different function to get the suggestions. So if we look at the function that's being called here, the scenario to provide app-defined suggestions. That function is right here, and it's basically making just a JavaScript array here of suggestions, and then we're going to get the query text to lowercase, we're going to get the max number of suggestions, and then we're just going to basically loop through and create a list of suggestions. Whoop, seem to have lost my context here. Loop through and make our list of suggestions and append that to our query suggestion. And then as long as it's greater than zero, we're just going to call display status and suggestions provided for query and query text. And there we go. So pretty straightforward implementation there. So I'm going to take a break here. In terms of the Q&A, I would ask, just because we don't have a great deal of time, we have only got an hour, I'm going to ask that you keep questions related to the content that we're presenting. If you've got other questions, my contact information is at the top of the conversation list there. You can always feel free to drop me an email or hit me up on Twitter. I'm DevHammer on Twitter. But I want to try and keep Q&A focused on the content that we're talking about today. So I'm going to go ahead and close Visual Studio. And fire it up again. So we've got that ready to go for next demo. I'm going to flip back over to my slides. All right. So that's search. Let's talk about sharing. So one of the ideas behind the share contract is that people really enjoy sharing. If there's one thing that we've learned from Facebook and Twitter and Google Plus and all of the various social media networks is that people spend an awful lot of their time sharing information. One might wonder whether some of that information they might do better not to share, but hey, you know, people want to share, so your application ideally should support sharing and give them that opportunity. And the share contract makes it really simple to share, whether it's sharing from data from one app to another, whether it's sharing information with Facebook, Twitter, with whatever application that they want to share with via email. And the share contract gives you a lightweight way of sharing that information without losing the context of your current application. And that's the basic idea. So let's take a look at we'll take a look at a demo of sharing. All right, so what I'm going to do is I'm going to go to my Photos app, and in my Photos app, I start off usually with my pictures library, and what I can do here is I can drop down into my camera roll, and I happen to be a big fan of something called .NET Gadgeteer, and so I actually have a screen capture from one of my .NET Gadgeteer projects, and let's say I want to share this with someone, and you know, maybe I just want to send an email with this screenshot. So what I can do over here is again slide in from the right, or use Windows and C to open the charms bar. Tap on the share charm, and in this case, I get a list of all of the various excuse me, I get a list of all of the various applications that know how to handle the information that I'm sharing. So you can see at the top, I have listed one photo, a file from the Photos application. So that tells me what the application is sharing. And then I have a series of quick links. So my email account allows me, or my email application allows me to have a few quick links of the people that I've emailed most recently. So in this case, it's saying, you know, email the various folks. There's a share target sample app. There's a mail application. There's Puzzle Touch. Puzzle Touch of creating puzzles from existing images, but I'm just going to use the mail icon here. So I tap mail, and it loads a UI that actually belongs to this mail application. So you can see in the background my Photos application is still running, but the mail application now has an opportunity to present me with a UI where I can say, okay, maybe I want to email myself a picture of this, and I can add a subject, cool Gadgeteer screenshot, and you can see that it has the file attached. I can also send that using SkyDrive, so that's an option with the mail application. It allows me to do it that way. Click send, sending the email, and now I'm done. That UI gets out of my way. I'm still here in my Photos application, so it makes it very easy for me to have an in-context experience for doing this share work. I can go ahead and close that and jump back over to my slides. All right, So let's talk a little bit about how share gets implemented. So to do sharing, what we start with is our source application. So inside our source application, we let the operating system know that we're available for sharing by registering with an object called the Data Transfer Manager. And by registering with that Data Transfer Manager, we can get a reference to something called the data package. And the data package is just a simple container that allows us to store the information that we want to be able to share. Once we've registered with that and the user selects the share charm, then our application, since it's active, gets an event that says, hey, the user wants to share. So that activates our application and we get that event. And then our application is responsible for providing whichever information inside our application, whatever data we want, to share with the requesting application. We finish that call, we do that asynchronously, we return. The operating system then will look at the data that has been provided and provide a filtered link of target applications and quick links that are available for those types of data that have been put in the data package. Then the user interacts with that list of apps and selects either the app, target app, or the quick link that they want to share with. The operating system via the share broker will then activate that target app and provide it with the share target kind that tells the target app that it's been activated for sharing. The target app then processes the data package contents, retrieves whatever information it's interested in, and then basically reports complete back to the share broker. It gets out of the way, and you're pretty much done at that point. Now, this data package can contain a lot of different types of information. It can contain plain text. It can contain formatted text. It can also contain a URI to a resource. It can contain formatted HTML. It can contain images or bitmaps, thumbnails, as well as full-size bitmaps. You can include file attachments. And then finally, you can also include a custom data format that you agree upon with other applications. So if the existing, sort of places to put stuff within the data package don't fit your needs, you can come up with a syntax that works for your application. It might be something that's a domain-specific type of syntax. All right, so let's take a look at a demo here. Switch over back to our desktop. Take a look and see. All right, so the question of will there be a Metro-style version of Outlook? I don't have the answer to that, and not really related to our content today. Again, if you can just try to keep the questions to what we're discussing today in terms of our demos, that would be fantastic. I'm more than happy to entertain any additional questions via email, but trying to stay focused on our content today. All right, so we're back into Visual Studio Express. I'm going to do a new project, and I'm going to see what I've got here. So I'm going to go ahead and do a share target sample here, and while we're waiting for that to load up, I go ahead and do another new project. And again, I'm going to take advantage of the online samples. Search these, and we're going to do sharing content source. Now, one of the nice things about the share target the shared target sample application is that it will allow you to display a great deal of information about what's in the data package, more so than most of the other applications that come pre-installed. I am having a few minor issues with my share target application on this machine, so it may or may not work in this case. I'm going to run it and see if we can actually get it to work. Now, when I run this from Visual Studio, what's going on here is this share target sample application doesn't actually have a ton of UI when we run it directly because it's actually designed to respond to a share request. So this doesn't actually do much of anything for me right now. But if I go back to my Photos application and go to my camera roll and do share and share target, now we'll see if this actually works for me. There we go. So what you can see here is this is describing a lot of information here. So this is basically saying this was not activated through a frequent quick link. It contains one photo, a file from the Photos application. It's pointing to a storage item in the local file system. So you can kind of see all of that information on here. And I can actually add a quick link if I want via the share target. So I can basically say, my target one and send photo and we'll just report complete. Now if I go back and do the share again, I should have that send photo share target, right, which will get me the same, get me back to the share target sample app. I'm going to go ahead and close that, and I'm going to jump over here to the share target demo. Go ahead and stop this. And if we look at our target.js, we should see in here So what we can see is we've got some markup that allows us to spit out all of the various content here from the data package. And then in our target.js, we can actually put that back where it belongs. We're actually getting data from our share operation here. So we get our activated handler, and when we are from a share target, what we're basically doing is saying we want to get the event args.detail.share operation, and that's actually going to give us access to the data package, which we access by this data property off the share operation. And so then we can access all the various bits that are associated with this data package, including properties.title, which is just text, properties.description. We can do a quick link if we had a quick link that was associated with this. We can also look to see if there's a thumbnail image. If there is, we can open that up and display it. We can set our image source to an object URL that we create from that blob. We can get text data, we can get URI data, so all of that various data is available to us in the target application. So if we jump over to our share source demo, let's go ahead and run that. Now, in our share source demo, we've got a lot of different things that we can do in terms of sharing. So we can share, for example, what are Metro style apps? Let's say, how awesome is the share contract? All right, so I can change that text, set that for sharing. Now, what that did behind the scenes is I need to be able to basically say, okay, here's what I'm going to share. So once I've set that information, I've basically added that to my data package. I can say, share target sample app, and we can see the title, How Awesome is the Share Contract, right? So we've gone ahead and added that content to our package, and we've retrieved it from our share target app. If I want to share an image, I can go ahead and select an image. Go ahead and we'll share another one of my Gadgeteer images and go ahead and do the share charm. Oops, something just went wrong. All right, so clearly something broke on me there. Try again. All right. Obviously, I busted something in my attempt to demo here, so we're gonna close that down for a second and try and restart it and see if we can get it to work. Perils of beta software. All right, try again. Let's try this one this time. We need to set that for sharing. That's what I missed. I missed my set it for sharing button. So we'll go ahead and share. And this time, let's share to Puzzle Touch. Puzzle Touch will go ahead and say, hey, I have the options of doing various kinds of puzzles. So let's do an easy 12-piece puzzle. And it says my new puzzle is ready, and it even gives me a helpful little image there. Now I can go over to the Start menu and go to Puzzle Touch. And we can pull up our brand new puzzle. So we actually have a jigsaw puzzle of the image that we just shared. So kind of cool stuff. I'm a fan of jigsaw puzzles, so just make one connection here so you can see how that works. We don't need to complete the whole puzzle. But so I just shared to a couple of different kinds of applications here. So now let's go ahead and just take a quick look in our program.js and so when we set up our share, we've got a function here called setup share, and we're getting a reference here to our data transfer manager, which comes from windows.applicationModel.datatransfer.datatransfermanager.getForCurrentView. So what that says is basically for my current app, I want to get a reference to the data transfer manager, and that tells the OS, hey, I'm ready to provide information for share. Then I call add event listener on the data transfer manager, and I tell it I'm going to handle this data requested function. In this case, in JavaScript, I'm creating an anonymous function, and I'm going to handle that in line. So basically, I'm going to say my request is e.request, and then depending on which scenario I'm in, I'm going to pass control over to a different function. So for example, when I want image data, I'm going to call this function here, image data requested handler, and then what I'm going to do is set the request.data.properties.title to the input box here value. I'm going to set the description to that input box value as well. That's an optional. Now, then I'm going to go and get a stream reference by calling windows.storage streams random access stream create from file. And I'm going to set the thumbnail to that stream reference. And then I'm going to go ahead and set storage items to that share value and set the bitmap to that stream reference as well. And once I've set that information, then the OS can pass control back over to the calling application and it can get that image. So the rest of the scenarios are quite similar in terms of how they function. The text data requested handler is quite simple. It's got the title, the description, and then it calls this set text API to pass in the share value. Set URI works in a very similar fashion. So all of these are APIs that are exposed on top of this data property of the request, which is that data package that we talked about a little bit earlier. And again, you get this request object from the data transfer manager when it calls this data requested event. It's going to pass in that object that we're calling, in this case, request. And then the data package actually hangs off of that request.data or, in this case, request.data. All right, so go ahead and close that. And close that solution as well. And let's flip back to our slides. Right, so got a question from Bill. When you share with a second application to the operating system, start a second copy of the target app if that app is already doing something to avoid interrupting what the app was already doing? So the answer to that is that all of these operations are going to be asynchronous. So no, it would not start a second. You can only have one instance of a Metro-style app running at any given time. So the running application would receive an activation message with the information, but it won't interrupt the actual the current operations that are in process because it's all running asynchronously. With Metro-style apps, basically any operation that is apt to take more than about 50 milliseconds will automatically be asynchronous. And in fact, you can't call those operations synchronously. So just so you know. All right. So the last contract that we're going to talk about in detail, I'll try and get to an additional demo of the Play-to contract if we have the time. But the last contract that I want to talk about in a little more detail is the settings contract. And the idea behind the settings contract is to really provide a consistent in-context way to access settings in your application. The idea here is very similar to, for those of you who may remember the transition from, say, Windows 3.1 to Windows 95, Microsoft provided guidelines at that time of how to build applications in a consistent fashion from a UI standpoint. So for example, when doing menus, your file menu always needs to be on the far left. Your help menu always needs to be on the far right. And typically your help menu will always have an about entry. Your file menu will always have an exit entry. So having those UI elements be in consistent places made it easy for users who'd never used an application before to find some of the most critical pieces of working with that application. In that same sense, using the settings contract will make it easy for users to figure out how to find the basic settings information for your application easily, even if they've never used your application before. So it reinforces that sort of common way of providing this functionality. So let's take a look at a quick demo of settings, and go ahead and switch over to my desktop. All right, so one of the various applications that provides settings is the Metro version of IE. And just switch over to my blog here. So if I again slide in from the right and tap Settings, you can see that Internet Explorer is providing a series of options through the settings contract, including settings about help and permissions. So if I tap about, you can see about Internet Explorer. This is a pre-release version. If I tap help, it's going to take me to a URL. I slide back in. and tap settings again. If I go to permissions, it shows me, for example, you know, can this app show notifications? Also shows version information there. And settings gives me some common settings that I might want. So I can delete my browsing history. I can allow sites to ask me for my physical location. I can clear existing permissions. I can set my Zoom level. I can set encoding, or I can change that encoding to be manual, etc. So let's take a look at an example of how to do this. And so what I'm going to do is, again, do new project. And I happen to have an app settings sample. Do app settings demo. Click OK. And we'll go ahead and run this and see what it looks like. So again, this is another one of the SDK samples. And what you can see here is I can show default behavior. I can add a flyout link to the settings charm. I can actually host content inside an iframe in my flyout control. I can pause my app. So for example, if you're building HTML5 games, you might want to be able to pause your application before you show the settings so that the user doesn't lose their place in the game. I can also invoke that flyout programmatically. So let's start with the scenario one. And if I click this, it's actually going to bring out that app settings, that settings charm programmatically. So you can actually invoke those charms programmatically. But I can do the same thing here by swiping in from the right and tapping settings. And you can see that with this particular scenario, all I get is the permissions dialog. So you can see I've got my app settings SDK sample. I can tell it I do or don't want it to allow access to my location. It also says that this app has permission to use these various things that it's asked permission for. And I can tap anywhere away from that flyout to dismiss it. That's the kind of behavior that you want. So for example, you would not want to have on this dialog or on this flyout, you would not want to have a close button or any sort of UI to dismiss it. That's simply dismissed by clicking off of the flyout itself. The back button here is to take me back to the settings screen. So if I tap permissions and tap back, it takes me back to that settings charm UI. Then I can also add some additional settings flyouts here. So when it added a help command and a settings flyout, now you can see if I tap help, it gives me the help page. If I go back, it takes me back to the charm. I can also go ahead and add, in this case, it's adding a legal notices, which is going to be displayed via iframe. So that content is loaded dynamically. Now, one of the scenarios that this is really useful for is if you have something that needs to go in your settings that you have to be able to keep up to date frequently. So this iframe is actually opening web-based content, but it's in a different security context. So it's actually sandboxed from the rest of your application. So there are some significant limits to what the content that's in the iframe can do. Mostly it can just pretty much display and execute any CSS or JavaScript that's specific to that content, but it can't do anything in the context of your application for security purposes. And also go ahead and add a settings flyout and then show that, and you can see the kinds of controls that I can have on my settings page. You know, I can have things like a push button, I can have a selection control, I can have these toggle buttons or toggle switches, and then you can see I can call that defaults or I can call that settings. Settings is the preferred way of calling it, just so that you're consistent with other applications. Again, I'm going to go ahead and close that down. And again, the way that this works is I've got a default.html. In this case, my JavaScript is actually broken up into different files. So we can see, for example, our scenario two here for adding a settings flyout. is basically when I get an on settings command, I'm going to handle that with an anonymous function. It's going to pass me an event argument, so I can say edetail application commands, and then I can pass in the information that I want to populate and call winjs.ui.settingsflyout populate settings. And then once I'm initialized, and I can start my application here. And then when show settings charm is called, which is when I click that show settings charm button, I can call windows.ui.applicationSettings.settingsPane.show. Right, so that's an API I can call to programmatically show that settings pane. Of course, I can also invoke that using using an application command as well, or using a slide in from the right. Now, one of the things that I didn't point out directly here, but I want to make sure that you notice, is that when you open any of these samples, you're going to get sort of a README file, or in this case, the description.html, that talks about all of the things that this application does, as well as allows you to view the code sample online. So you can see down at the bottom there, it's giving me a URI for that particular sample, so I can go and delve into it online if I choose. So basically, this is, you know, says it uses the Windows UI application settings namespace and the settings flyout control. It gives some notes about the samples, including the fact that this is specific to the Windows 8 consumer preview. You can probably safely assume that these samples will be updated for the release preview when that is out. I don't know what the timing on that is going to look like. You can certainly continue looking at and learning from these samples using the consumer preview until you have a chance to update to the release preview. But there's lots of good stuff here. And then there's also a section that includes related topics. So, for example, if I click through here, it's going to take me to the adding app settings section of the MSDN library for Metro-style apps. You can get to the overall Windows Developer Center by going to dev.windows.com, but each of these samples will take you to, for example, quick starts using the functionality that is related to the sample. So the samples are a really great way of learning a lot of the functionality that's available in the in WinJS. All right, so one of the other, I'm not going to worry about switching back to slides because but one of the other demos that I wanted to show you was the Play-To contract. And let me go ahead. Let me do this. So the Play-To contract is designed for allowing you to play photos, audio, video, various media to devices that are designed to receive that information over the network. And that can include televisions, which support a protocol called DLNA. It can also include applications that know how to receive that content. So I've got a demo already put together. Again, this is one of the SDK sample demos. It's pretty straightforward. But the idea is you can have HTML5 audio or video content, and you can play that to available devices or applications on your network. Now, what I've done here is, because I don't have a device that is DLNA capable, and even if I did, I wouldn't be able to show it to you via the webcast, what I've done is I've taken Windows Media Player here, and if you go to the Stream menu, one of the options here is allow remote control of my player. If you enable that option, you'll actually be able to see that that device then, or see that as a device in your devices menu when you go to do the Play-To contract. So if we dig into our Play-To example here, you can see we've got our default.html. And it's going to have the basic controls for our content. And then We've got a couple of different scenarios. So scenario one, HTML demonstrates how to stream a video file. And so what we see here is we've got a couple of buttons. We've got use web content or pick a video file. And then we've got a control that this is part of the SDK JavaScript. And then we have just a simple HTML5, and this is a standards-based HTML5 control, which we're calling local video one. And we've got the size of it, and then the source is pointing to our old favorite Big Buck Bunny trailer MP4. So this is basically an MP4 file. So let's run this. So when we run this, again, we've got an option of streaming a video file. We can stream a photo slideshow. I could pick a video file from my local, or I can use the web content. Go ahead and use the web content. And we can see here, this should start playing here momentarily. So this is, I'm going to go ahead and pause it for a second and back it up. Now, while I'm playing this, I can go in here and go to my devices charm, and you'll see that one of the available devices here is a device that can play video. So I'm going to go ahead and click available, or I'm going to click that item, and now we'll see that our Windows Media Player is now receiving that streamed video from my application. Now imagine if this was a media player on a different device, or if this was your home TV. Really nice because you can do this over a wireless network. You don't have to worry about which cable's compatible. You can simply do the play to send the data across the network, and it all just works. So it's very convenient that way. So when I implement this scenario, so if I go over to my scenario 1.js, what's going to happen here is basically when my application fires this page up, this ready function will get called. And when that function is called, I'm basically calling some of these APIs. So I'm basically saying my local video one, I'm going to add a state changed event listener to my play to source here. And then when the state changes, basically I'm doing some logging here, but I'm going to get the states from the play to connection state and see if we're connected, disconnected, or rendering. And when I pick a file from my local file system, I'm going to automatically play it. And then when I play web content, I'm going to set my local video source to the source there, and then I'm going to play that. Right, and then I've got click event handlers for both of my buttons as well. So it becomes fairly straightforward in this scenario to send media, and you can do the same thing with photos as well, to a remote device or application. It's great use of contracts. Ahead and jump back here to our slides. Get to our last slide. That wraps up the content that I had. Let me check and see what we've got over. So we can go through the questions here. If a multi-monitor computer, can you communicate between monitors with multiple Metro apps running at the same time? As far as I'm aware, at least with the consumer preview, you can only have Metro applications running on one screen at a time. You can have multiple Metro apps running via Snap, which is a little beyond the scope of what we're talking about today, but Snap allows you to bring another app on screen at the same time as your main application in a smaller view. So one of the things that's required of Metro applications is they do need to handle that Snap state. Another question. Over time, I've downloaded many programs, i.e. Visual Studio, etc., but I can't get the newest version, etc. Is there any way to reset, get the newest version, and start again? So I'm not clear on what you mean by you can't get the newest version. So in the case of Metro-style applications, certainly the application developer will be responsible for which version is in the store, and then the store manages the versioning and the availability of updates. In the case of desktop applications, you need to install the latest version to get that. So I'm not sure if that, hopefully that answers the question. That looks like that's it for our questions. It looks like we're right at 12:30. So I want to thank everybody for joining us for this talk on contracts. I hope that it was helpful in terms of giving you some ideas of the kinds of things that you can do with contracts in Windows 8 Metro applications. Again, you can reach me via my blog at devhammer.net. More than happy to catch up with you on any other questions you might have. You can also catch me on Twitter as devhammer. And hope you found this valuable. Thanks.